Okay, so we're going to read from 2 Timothy chapter 4. So I'll read it. It says, do your best to come to me soon. For Demas, in love with this present world, has deserted me and gone to Thessalonica. Crescens has gone to Galatia, Titus to Dalmatia. Luke alone is with me. Get Mark and bring him with you, for he is very useful to me for ministry. Tychicus I have sent to Ephesus. And when you come, bring the cloak that I left with Carpus at Troas, also the books and above all the parchments. Alexander the coppersmith did me great harm. The Lord will repay him according to his deeds. Beware of him yourself, for he strongly opposed our message. At my first defence, no one came to stand by me, but all deserted me. May it not be charged against them. But the Lord stood by me and strengthened me, so that through me the message might be fully proclaimed and all the Gentiles might hear it. So I was rescued from the lion's mouth. The Lord will rescue me from every evil deed and bring me safely into his heavenly kingdom. To him be the glory forever and ever. Amen. Greet Prisca and Aquila and the household of Onesiphorus. Erastus remained at Corinth, and I left Trophimus, who was ill, at Miletus. Do your best to come before winter. Eubulus sends greetings to you, as do Pudens and Linus and Claudia and all the brothers. The Lord be with your spirit. Grace be with you. There you go. You can say amen again if you want. So we've done it. We've got to the end of Paul's second letter to Timothy. And we've been doing it for a while now. And by now you should have heard that these are some of the last days of Paul's life, and that Paul is in Rome in turbulent and dangerous days. He was imprisoned, possibly isn't at this point, but later on he is again. And just for being a follower of Jesus, really. And history tells us that he is put to death really quickly after the end of this letter, maybe only just a couple of months after he writes it. So that these are his closing remarks at the end of his letter. And he's talking about some, really normal, personal and practical things. He's talking about people who've been working with them, saying how much he'd love to see Timothy and another guy he wants to see, Mark. And he asks for some really practical things. And he wants his warm winter coat, who doesn't? And some scrolls and some writings. And he's sending his love and his greetings. And this is Paul probably his most human and his most relatable. You know, in my mind, Paul is this total spiritual giant. You know, I'm thinking an amazing man of God, an incredible theologian. He's an evangelist. He's a church planter. He's a missionary. He's determined and intrepid. You know, I don't know, think John Stott, Wayne Grunem, with a bit of Bear Grylls in there, maybe some Hudson Taylor, maybe a bit of Heidi Baker. You know, he's this incredible, inspirational, pioneering character. So when he says, don't forget to bring my coat, you think, gosh, Paul, do you really need it? You know, aren't you going to go and kind of just carry on, whatever? But Paul's as human as you and me. And if I'm really honest, when I realised these were the verses that I'd got to preach on, I thought, this is totally the bit of a book that I would skim normally. Yeah, end, right, we're off. Next book. And so it's been really good to take a deeper look. A couple of weeks ago, we know we read in 2 Timothy 3, it talks about all scripture being God-breathed, useful for correcting, training in righteousness, so that we can be equipped for good works. And that's what we want, isn't it? So let's see what God has for us today. Have we got the PowerPoint with the timeline? This is Paul's life. Okay, and you can see where he's... you can see it. 34 AD, that's his conversion. 65 AD, that's when he dies. And Paul stays on mission to the very end. And he works and he builds long-lasting relationships with other believers so that he can spread the gospel. You know, for about 20 or 30 years, he travels around Syria and Turkey and Athens and Corinth and Rome. And if you read Acts, you can see where he goes and who he travels with. That has the kind of the factual account of what he does and what he sees and some of what happens and lots of names of people who travel with him. But, you know, actually, when I was looking, I realised he always went with other people. He was always on shared mission to spread the gospel. He was sent out by the believers. He goes initially with Barnabas and a guy called John Mark, and they go into full-on church planting mode. You know, they go to a place, they set up, they meet people, they make relationships, they start little churches, they move on, sometimes because they have to. And he does different, he goes three big missionary trips. And then they go back to some places, they go to some new places, they end up in Rome. Not that he wants to, but he has to because he's arrested. But wherever he goes, he's building relationships, he's making friendships. Did you know that you can't really do church planting if you can't build relationships with people? You have to make friendships. You know, when we first came to Mill Hill and planted the church back in 2003, we didn't actually know anybody else. We didn't even really know our little team very well. We'd been put together, we'd met a couple of times, but we picked up our stuff and we moved to North London. So I think there was 10 adults and 6 kids from all different ages, and we moved into the area and we began the work of building relationships with each other and with our new friends and our new neighbours where we'd moved to. In our little church community, we ate together and we worshipped together and we did outreach and we did ministry stuff together. And I had small children, so I did a lot of coffee mornings with other mums and I went to soft play. All of the stuff that I was doing in my other place, but doing it with this thing, I need to make friendships with people, and chatted at the school gates and invited people to come and eat dinner, kids to come for dinner. And as a church team, we did prayer walks and we did leafleting and we gave away mince pies and hot cross buns at tube stations. And we did some kids events in the park and we painted bits of the concourse on Graham Park. And we began to see people come to the church and people saved and baptised. And the church was born and started to grow. I have to say, the relationships with those people in the very early days of our church plant have been really strong and really long-lasting, really meaningful. It was, you know, it's always brilliant when we meet up with any of those people who worked so hard with us. I mean, and man, we did work hard, you know. I used to literally bring church in a trailer from my house, and Duncan would often be doing the sermon, and I would hitch up the trailer, pull it out, literally hard work, and thinking, why am I doing this? Anyway, we just did it, you know?
Sorry.
But we were, you know, we had an amazing team. When you got to the church, other people would come and load it up, offload it, and, you know, an amazing team. Do you know our friendship with Caroline and Jerry started just 3 days after we moved to the area? And she really kindly knocked on our door and offered to walk with me and our kids to Deansbrook, where her kids were and my kids were, on our first day. Because she'd heard about this crazy Christian family who were coming to start a church plant and who knew nobody. And so she came and knocked on our door. You know, that's the beginning of an amazing friendship that God's orchestrated that lasted 20 years, you know. These are the types of relationships that Paul built in his church planting missionary journeys. Real bonds of love and friendship and fellowship. But now Paul's in Rome, and in chapter 4, the previous chapter, he talks about, you know, he knows that it's the end of his life is coming. He says, the time of my departure has come. I've fought the good fight, I've finished the race, and I've kept the faith. So he knows that's coming. But the next chapter, in verses 9 and 11, you really don't get the impression that Paul feels like he's winding down or backing out in his passion to do what God's called him to do. He's still on mission. In verses 9 and 10, he says to Timothy, Timothy, come on, I need you here in Rome. Would you come quickly? Only Luke is with me. And we know Luke is the author of Luke's gospel. He also wrote the book of Acts. And he goes with Paul to Jerusalem in Acts chapter 20. And then he stays with him and he goes on with him to Rome. And here in 2 Timothy verse 10, he still is. Maybe that's seven or so years. You know, he's got Luke with him. So when he says, only Luke is with me, he's not going, oh, I've only got Luke with me, I've pulled the short straw. He's like, Luke's been this incredible companion who's literally been with him in some of the worst times of his life, through arrest and shipwreck and difficulty and persecution. But he's still saying, but, you know, it's not good enough. I need some more people. Timothy, would you come? There's still work to do. I think he's used to working with lots of other people. His expectation is, you know, I need a bigger team. I've got stuff to do. And he's saying, come and bring some others. Let's keep working on this incredible mission that I've been given. So Paul wasn't a lone ranger. He was sent out by other believers. He traveled with co-workers and team. He stayed long enough in places, wherever possible, to build a team of believers who were mature enough to continue to do church together and to keep telling others about Christ. He actively built friend and team. He loved and valued those he was in relationship with. And he was single-track-minded in bringing the gospel, but he knew he wasn't going to do it on his own. And these weren't just colleagues. He really loved Timothy. There's a whole pile of names in these few short verses that he of talking about people that he's worked with, and he's saying, "Oh, say hello to this person." He mentions, I'm going to read them. He mentions Timothy and Crescens, Titus, Luke, Mark, Tychicus, Carpus, Prisca, Aquila, Onesiphorus, Erastus, Trophimus, Eubulus, Pudens, Linus, Claudia, and then he just goes, all the brothers. You know, so many people that he wants to say hello to, he wants to be remembered by, people he loves and cares about. So we need to be a bit like Paul, don't we? Build relationships with other people. But, you know, when we work with other people, there can be difficult moments. In verse 10, Paul's telling Timothy about some people who've worked with him and who are no longer in Rome with him. And he says, "For Demas, because he loved this world, has deserted me and has gone to Thessalonica. Crescens has gone to Galatia and Titus to Dalmatia." So Paul's current team in Rome seems to have dispersed. It's such an interesting verse, isn't it? There's definitely judgment there, isn't there? Demas hasn't just gone somewhere else. Paul says he loved the world and he's deserted me. I was wondering what was going through Demas's head before he left, and we don't know. We do know that Demas is in Rome with Paul in the epicenter or the center of the known world. And, you know, even now, Rome's a pretty amazing place to visit. And I guess Demas was realizing, I'm in this amazing city, but it's really dangerous to be a Christian here. You know, they don't like us. Nero is not a great guy. He doesn't love Christians. And he's realizing it's not looking good for Paul, and it's probably not looking good for me. If he stays in Rome with Paul, then his life is looking to be at real risk. And, you know, fair enough, he doesn't want to die. Or, you know, we don't know. Maybe there's a pretty girl in Thessalonica, you know? Or maybe a really good business opportunity. You know, you can make some money. Or maybe his family's just there. We don't know, but we do know that he doesn't put God at the heart of that decision-making process. He isn't saying, "God, what do you want me to do? Where do you want me to go? How do you want to use me?" Because Paul says he loved this world, and it was his love of the world and maybe his life that was at the heart of his decision to leave Rome, not God. Putting God at the heart was a bit too costly for him. It's interesting that Paul doesn't pass judgment in the same way about Crescens or Titus. They go to Galatia and Dalmatia, respectively. I guess they didn't want to die either. But something in the way they made their decision to leave Rome was different. I guess God was at the heart of the way they made their decision to leave Rome. So we need to watch our motives. We need to be really careful that God is at the heart of our decision-making processes. You know, over the years, I've seen a lot of people who've moved on from London. I guess you guys might have done as well. I totally understand why people made those decisions. London is expensive. Housing is expensive. Sometimes when you go into beautiful countryside, you do wonder why we choose to live in a big city as well. I went up to the Peak District, took my mum out for Sunday lunch on Mother's Day. I drove up, beautiful village in the Peak District. The sun was out, beautiful daffodils, lovely village green. I couldn't park really close, so I had to walk down the road past, honestly, some of the loveliest houses. I took photos, such nice houses. And I thought, you know, maybe I could live in the countryside. I don't think so. It's cold up north. But, you know, as a Londoner, I think there's always that push that people have to leave the city. And, you know, it has been tough and quite costly for us as a church sometimes. You know, you see good couples and individuals who leave London. And, you know, sometimes in the early days of the church, when we were struggling to find people and we were counting how many people are on the chairs, I honestly might have been a bit judgy sometimes. I'm sorry. Are they going for the right reasons? Are they just moving for a bigger house? You know, God didn't die for clean air, you know. Jesus wept over the city. He loved the city. Have they asked God what his thoughts are? Have they even thought about what they're going to do for church? Actually, just young people, I was thinking, you know, when you're thinking about where you might want to go to university and college, Duncan reminded me, we said to our children, put that in your thinking process. Where do you think you're going to go to church? And where are you going to meet with God's family when you're there? When I came to London, I was in South London, my first Sunday I went to church. I thought, if I don't go straight away, I might not go. So I just got up and I thought, okay, I'm just going to, I got my A to Z. It was a book in those days, it wasn't on the phone. And I just thought, right, where is this church? I'm going to go to this church. And I just went to church on my first Sunday. Make a decision. You got to make it now, because when you get to uni or college, you're not going to make it because there'll be lots of other things to do. So I just went on my own. It was great. Loved it. Sorry, back to the sermon. Demas loved the world. Don't let love of the world be at the heart of your thinking process. Let God be at the heart. Do you remember Andy and Zoe Cooley? They moved to Manchester. You know, they really prayed about that decision over several years. They'd had powerful pictures and words, but they were still really prayerful, asking God for him to open the right doors. They were very strongly convinced that God was calling them north to Manchester. And God opened up work for Andy and a place for them to plant a church, which is brilliant. And they could afford a bigger house too, which is lovely. We've been to visit it. But it was God's plan and God's timing that was at the heart of their move. And, you know, for us as a church here in London, that was tough. Did we want to see them go? No. You know, they are genuinely our friends and our co-workers in the faith. And it is painful to lose people when they move on. You miss what they did. You miss their ministry and their enthusiasm. You know, Andy used to cycle down from Barnet every Friday morning for a 6 a.m. prayer meeting. Used to think he was mad, actually. And Zoe, you know, she set up the legal centre and with Jana, and she would lead worship really beautifully on Sundays. And, you know, their kids were in our youth work. And, you know, you just miss the week in, week outness of friendship, and it can be hard. But, you know, if you know that God has called someone to move, if you know that prayer is at the heart of their decision making, if you know that God is in it, then you rejoice and you thank God that his kingdom is continuing to grow and thrive in the new place they've gone to, because they're there. And you can trust God that he'll be here with us as well. My next point is that we need to be careful of people who oppose the gospel of Christ. When you work with people, there are tricky moments. So verse 14 says, Alexander the coppersmith did me great harm. You two should be on your guard against him because he strongly opposed our message. So again, we don't know who Alexander is, if he was part of the Rome church planting team or maybe just a really bad neighbour. Or we don't know anything about him. You know, maybe he is just a bad neighbour, a local Roman guy, and Jesus and Paul's chatted to him about Jesus and faith, and he hasn't liked what Paul's saying. You know, our gospel is a bit offensive, isn't it? Jesus Christ, who we believe in, says that all people are sinners. He says you're all sinners. So your lovely neighbour who lives down the road, who is really kind to people and really generous with her time and her energy, she's still a sinner if she doesn't know Jesus, because we're all sinners. You know, that's really offensive. That is really offensive. And we also say, you know, Jesus says, I'm the way, the truth and the life. The only way to the Father is through me. Also really offensive to people who've got other faiths. You know, what do you mean? You know, I'm devout. I believe this devoutly. No, we're saying that's not So the faith can, our faith can be offensive. You know, that's before we start talking about living a holy life or sexual ethics or anything else. And, you know, the world is sadly unafraid to be judgmental and accusatory about what we believe, isn't it? It's quite out there saying, yeah, we don't agree with that. And so maybe that was what Alexander was doing. Or I was thinking maybe he was somebody who was quite a gifted person. And we know he's a coppersmith. And maybe he's a new convert and he's moved into church and people have seen his giftedness. But maybe he's immature and he's coming through into leadership, but he's after power or he's living immorally. Or, you know, God hasn't kind of worked out what it means kind of in his lifestyle. And maybe sin was exposed. You know, and sometimes we see that in the church, don't we, that leaders fall into sin. And, you know, the fallout from that can be really bad. It's terrible. It does great harm to the church. Maybe he's just started coming along to church and he's got offended by something that happened. Maybe Paul said, you know, those lovely bangles and bracelets you're bringing, you can't bring them to church and sell them to the congregation. You can't do that. You know, I know a family, and not in our church, but their child wasn't picked to be the lead role in the nativity and it was kind of her turn. They stopped coming to church. Now, there was probably other things happening, but how sad. Got really offended. You know, and sometimes people have disagreements. You know, who would believe it, that we would have disagreements with each other? And we can get up, or people get upset by leadership decisions, or sometimes there's unhelpful gossiping about situations. You know, over the course of 20 years, we've seen some stuff. I'd love to tell you, but, you know, we have seen some stuff. But, you know, actually, the reality is it's not always appropriate for everybody to know all the stuff, you know, and there's some stuff that it's just not right to share, which does mean that you sitting out there can see something from one side and you don't really always know the whole story. But, you know, as a quick aside, if you do think something's wrong, or if a decision you think we've made a decision that's not right, then do come and talk to one of the leaders about it. You know, we're not infallible, but we do want to be as transparent about decisions as we can be. The church is God's bride. And, you know, this building isn't the church. You are the church. And we want to love and respect and listen to you, but also to protect you as we work together to reach others with the gospel. So, and you know, with Alexandra, so we don't know. We don't know what the reason was, but he did great harm to Paul. And Paul actually speaks out and he says to Timothy as another worker. This is why I think he might have been bit in the church. Or maybe it's just because Paul's coming to Rome, I don't know. But he's saying, you know, be careful with him. If he comes to you, or if you meet him, be careful. He did great harm. Be on your guard against him. Be careful. In verse 11, Paul says to Timothy, he says, when you come, bring Mark with you. He is helpful to me in my ministry. So John Mark, they think that that's the same person, go back a long way, and Paul go back a long way. So approximately 18 years before, John Mark is a really young guy, and he goes with Paul and Barnabas on their first missionary journey. And he went home quite early. He didn't stay the course. He went home quite early. We don't know why. But we do know that Paul feels he's been let down quite badly by him. Because when he gets to the next missionary journey, Paul refuses to let him come. And he says, no, he's not coming. And he so strongly feels about it that he has a bit of an argument with Barnabas. And he says, if you're going with him, I'm not coming. Or I don't know. Or Barnabas says, if you're not going to take him, I'm not going to come with you. I don't know. They have a sharp disagreement. It says it. So, you know, Paul felt very badly let down by John Mark. But, you know, clearly Paul doesn't leave that relationship in unforgiveness and broken. He clearly forgives Mark, because now we're sort of talking about 18 years later. He's saying, actually, bring Mark. When you come, bring Mark, because I want to work with him. He's helpful to me. You know, sometimes people do let us down. I'm just going to say, don't give up on them. You know, it's up to us, I think, to forgive people and ask God to give us the grace to forgive people and try where you can to restore people and to give them a second chance. We don't know if this is the same Mark, but some people say he's not, some people say, but this is the Mark, I think this is the Mark that wrote the Gospel of Mark, or it could have been. And you do wonder, would Mark have gone on to write the Gospel if he hadn't been known the forgiveness and the restoration of coming back into a relationship? He was just a young guy. He might just have thought, you know, that's it, I'm out. I messed up so big time that I can't do anything else for God. But no, he's restored, and amazing that he might have been the guy who wrote the Gospel. So we're coming to end. One of the things we need to do is to work in a church team and to be known. So we've seen that Paul had a great group of friends and co-workers, and he worked with them. So I'd really urge you to do a couple of things. One is, if you're not already doing it, to serve in a team on a Sunday. Lots of different areas. You can do really practical jobs, or you can do some, if you're really gifted in worship, or if you love the children, you can come and do that. But find a team that you've got a heart for and get to be known by people in the church. Come and work alongside others. Also, I'd want to urge you to join a life group. We talked about that a little bit. Such a good place to get to know people. You know, we meet on a Thursday. Sometimes on a Thursday, I'm thinking it's the end of the week. I'm feeling a bit tired. But by the end of Thursday evening, when people have come and we've shared and we've prayed with each other, so good. It's good to have a commitment to stay in relationship with other people. While I'm talking about teams, I just wanted to say a huge thank you to the kids work team as well, and our creche team who faithfully serve our children. You guys are amazing, so good-hearted and kind and faithful. And I really felt God say, in Mark 9 it says, whoever welcomes one of these little ones welcomes me. And I really felt God say, you know, you are so welcome in my throne room because you welcome the children. So thank you. I'm just going to go straight to my final point, I think. Final point is that we need to keep Jesus at the centre and trust in him alone and rely on him alone. In verse 16, Paul says, at my first defence, no one came to stand by me, but all deserted me. May it not be charged against them. But the Lord stood with me and strengthened me, so that through me the message might be fully proclaimed and all the Gentiles might hear it. So I was rescued from the lion's mouth. The Lord will rescue me from every evil deed and bring me safely into his heavenly kingdom. To him be the glory forever and ever. So, you know, Paul was in this difficult situation and nobody else was there. And when the chips are down, who are you going to rely on? He just said, I know the Lord stood with me and strengthened me. And we've all been in situations like that, haven't we, where we need something, and actually what we need is God. What we need is the Lord. And we need to know that actually it's good to work with other people, but we're putting our heart and our commitment and us in the Lord. We're putting our hope in him. He's the one who's going to strengthen you. He's the one who's going to give you the words to say. You know, Paul was literally not fed to the lions because he trusted in God. And Paul knows that God is always with him. And he's built this lifestyle of knowing that he can trust in God's strength. And that's what we need to do. So we need to put our strength in the Lord. We're going to take communion now. And I just want to say, after communion, we probably have, I don't know if you're going to have time actually, really, but we want to pray that we're like Paul and committed to building good relationships. We want God to be at the heart of our decisions, and we want to be those people who look to Jesus to stand next to us in times of trouble and difficulty and to not rely on anything else. I'm going to ask Rashanti and Jebson to come up, but I want to say, would you take this moment just to thank God for his forgiveness that he's given to you, but also to take a moment to pray for his grace to help you if you need to forgive other people, and you know, to do whatever you can to restore other people as well.